the future. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Hey everybody, it is Friday, March 26, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Yes, it is our Friday news roundup, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week I talk to unemployed Trump staffer Sean Kitchen about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. We also are streaming live on our YouTube channel, everybody. Don't forget to get on over there. If you're not there already, smash that subscribe button and hit that bell so you know every time we go live. And don't forget to like this stream, too. That helps everybody find our channel and amplify everything that we're doing here at Raging Chicken. On today's show, we're going to do a little flip-flop here. Sean got a last-minute call that he's got to duck out a little bit early, so we'll get to that. But on today's show, Georgia Republicans pass a slew of voter suppression measures. As reported in The Guardian, the new legislation requires voters to submit ID information with both absentee ballot request and the ballot itself. It limits the use of absentee ballot drop boxes, allows for unlimited challenges to voter qualifications, cuts the runoff election period from 9 to 4 weeks, and significantly shortens the amount of time voters have to request an absentee ballot. And according to an explosive article in The Intercept, Ken Klippenstein obtained internal documents showing that Amazon managers and executives have been fully aware that drivers have often resort to peeing in bottles and even pooping in plastic bags due to the pressure to meet package quotas and intense scheduling. The report flies in the face of tweets this week from Amazon executives who said of workers' stories about having to pee in bottles, quote, "You don't really believe the peeing in bottles thing, do you? I mean, if that were true, nobody would work for us." Oops. Yep, the report drops as Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama, enter the last week of voting on unionization. And in a failed attempt at witty snark, right, Amazon executive Dave Clark this week took to Twitter to respond to the news that Bernie Sanders will be traveling to Bessemer to join workers on the picket line. He wrote, "I welcome Senator Sanders to Burlington and appreciate his push for a progressive workplace," he wrote. Then he added, "I often say that we're the Bernie Sanders of employers. And that's not quite right because we actually deliver on a progressive workplace. So if you want to hear about a $15 an hour minimum wage and health care, Senator Sanders will be speaking downtown. But if you would like to make at least $15 an hour and have good health care, Amazon is hiring." Yeah, the tweets landed like a brick as there was a big pile on it said, like, oh yeah, progressive legislation. Like, did you hand out your plastic bottles to every worker so they could pee in them? Didn't go over so well. Oh, and we should also mention that Amazon workers in Italy went on strike over labor conditions this week. So Amazon, ding, ding, ding. Hear that bell? It tolls for you. Speaking of strikes, Columbia University graduate workers continue their strike for a second week. Key demands in the more than two-year negotiations for their first contract include a neutral arbitrator in harassment cases, union coverage for more student workers, and a pay increase. And, God, it just spreads like wildfire, doesn't it? It must be the spring. Graduate student workers at NYU began voting on their own strike authorization on Tuesday. The strike authorization vote was called after more than 9 months of negotiations in which graduate student union made significant concessions, but the university is just like, nah, we want you to suffer. And Rutgers University, more university news, I guess. Rutgers University says that all students must be vaccinated to return to in-person classes in fall 2021. Rutgers is one of the first universities in the nation to begin a rollout of vaccination and prevention protocols for the next academic year. And yes, it means another academic year with social distancing and with face masks. In today's PA Focus, it's time to take a deep dive into the shit show that is the Harrisburg mayoral race. Republican charter school grifter turned Democrat Otto Banks had his residency challenged in court this week and is allowed, for now, to stay on the ballot, which is crazy. Banks bought a house in Harrisburg in August 2020 to run for mayor, but never used his utilities. Which, I mean, do you really need water or electricity? I mean, come on. I mean, you just like, look, he's a minimalist, like cares about the environment. Well, that raised questions about if he was actually living in the city. And the judge presiding over the case sided with Banks. Interesting. And Dr. Rachel Levine was confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health by the United States Senate this week and made history by being the highest-ranking transgender official in U.S. history. Whoop, whoop. Meanwhile, back here in PA, in New Jersey, the COVID-19 cases have begun to surge again, as both states have moved quickly to open businesses and return their kids to in-person classes. And the surge is being attributed in part to the spread of the more contagious variants of COVID-19. And Cyril Michalczko, the new progressive columnist for the Bucks County Courier Times and the Intelligencer, shines a spotlight on how the white supremacist adjacent Turning Point USA has made inroads into the Penridge School District. Both the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center have documented numerous cases of racism, bigotry, and white nationalism that have infected TPUSA for years. Michalczko, by the way, will be on Out to Coop Live on Monday, April 5th. We're going to dig into this story and all progressive happenings around the area. And yes, another sign of a spring. Sean got snubbed on State Street this week. And we'll talk about that one a little later on. And today's last call, NASA gets ready to launch its Mars helicopter, Ingenuity, sometime in early April, I guess. Ingenuity is attached to the belly of the Perseverance rover. The rover has dropped the debris shield covering the little helicopter, and NASA has identified a 33-by-33-foot patch of the red planet for Ingenuity's airfield. This will be the first attempt at powered flight on Mars. And keeping with a big first, Ingenuity is carrying a postage-sized piece of fabric from the Wright brothers' original aircraft that made its historic flight at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Pretty cool. And, you know, might as well throw this in, too. LEGO announces its biggest and most detailed space shuttle set ever. It's a little pricey for my stuff, but, man, is it tempting. Yes. And big news, I got my first round of the Pfizer vaccine shot. I'm very excited about that. And we'll also have some news about, say, free will beer releases this week. I want to remind you to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast. Right, Out to Coop Live, as I mentioned already, on April 5th, we've got Cyril Michalczko coming up, right? He is that new progressive columnist at the Bucks County Courier Times and the Intelligencer. We'll be talking about, the launch of this new column that just took place, and already some of the kind of big stories that he's breaking already. And then on April 12th, we're going to have Chad Nicholson from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund talking about the fight for home rule in Grant Township. And that's a fight to fight off the frackers and protect water supplies and individual health. We want to thank our newest patrons once again, Brian Jude and our newest patron, Janet, who joined a little over a week ago at the $5 a month level. And as I mentioned on this week's Out to Coop Live, not only is Janet the newest patron, but if I've got it right, she's our first Canadian patron, which I'm totally psyched about. Give me that maple leaf right now. I'm moving. And welcome to our growing Raging Chicken Patreon community. Also got to give a shout out to the folks at the Game Inn. The Game Inn is located right on Route 309 in Quakertown, PA. It is a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. They are friends of the show and happen to be the parents of one of my son's best friends. They have almost every gaming product you can imagine, N64s, Nintendo DSs, PS4s, and the Switch, video games for all platforms, Funko Pops, action figures. Check them out at their Facebook page at The Game Inn. Check them out on Twitter at The Game Inn. That's with two N's. Look them up. Drop them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com if you look for something special, or give them a call at 267-424-2535. Check them out on the web at thegameinn2ns.com. Look, and if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. We got rid of Trump, and now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. We're here for the fight, and we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're not quite ready to jump on the Patreon bandwagon, you can head on over to paypal.me/rcpress and drop us a one-time donation. Sean, I blew through that as quickly as I could. I know we've got kind of like a hard out. I will not mention the person who is dragging you away today. Just kidding. But why don't we start off with what's happening in kind of Pennsylvania to make sure we get this in. But first, before we get there first, I'm rushing things a little bit too much here. How the hell are you, Sean?
I'm pretty good. You know, it's just another week in Harrisburg. Everything is deck weather is here. You know, it's time to celebrate that. You know, love sitting on the deck. You know, love being outside. I think I'm working on my tan already. You know,
it's very good.
I'm the only one in my family who tans up, and you know, so.
I see you're working on your Zoom background too, as well, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, yes, I am.
Look at that.
Definitely.
Well, listen, yep. Sean's got a really hard out real soon. So, but I know there's this one story he really wants to kind of talk about. So we'll get there if he gets a chance to drop back in later on in the show. That'll be great. But
Sean, snubbing.
What's that?
The snubbing.
Oh, well, your choice. How about you choose? You can talk the Harrisburg Merrill race, or you can talk about the snubbing.
So the snubbing happened after I was sitting outside Dauphin County Courthouse on Tuesday or Monday awaiting this hearing, and, you know, got some photos of it. You know, Harrisburg, we can talk about the Harrisburg race as a shit show, but yeah, you know, I was sitting on the deck as normal with Roxbury. You know, for those who don't know, the deck is like literally feet from the Capitol steps, like 100 feet. The Capitol steps, 200 feet most, like pretty much you can throw a baseball and hit the Capitol steps from where he's at.
So you're just hanging out, nice spring day, right?
Nice spring day. We're talking about the case that went on.
You're feeling that all that kind of brotherly love that you bring from Philly, like saying hello to people on the street because it's so nice. People are happy to be outside, right?
Yeah, and you know, it was actually pretty funny. There was someone walking up the street. I'm not going to try to name them. But someone with the security detail.
Okay, you give us short, tall, like, you know.
Tall.
Someone tall. Okay, good. All right.
Yeah. There's a few tall people in Harrisburg. And, you know, it was actually pretty funny. We're sitting on the deck and Roxbury looks over like, oh, my God, this person was like making a beeline. And then they saw us sitting on the deck and then walked across the street and to avoid walking past us. I don't, or maybe avoid walking past me, but it was someone that a little bit of an adversarial relationship on Twitter, so I can see that.
Well, this is somebody you knew. This is not just a random person that was just kind of walking down the street and decided to cross over.
No, this is someone we know. This is someone all of us know. Yeah, and you know the security detail.
It wasn't Matt Brulette, was it? I mean, it wasn't him?
No.
Oh, okay. Just want to rule that out. Just okay. Just want to say.
But their security detail was walking past us, and this is the person in question broke away from their security detail to avoid walking past the deck, the gauntlet, and
gauntlet.
You know, Roxbury's like, "Yo, you go get your boy, you're gonna lose him," and the security people start laughing. It's like, "No, I don't think we'll lose him. You know, it's kind of hard to miss him." So, yeah, you know, it was kind of a fun time. You know what I mean?
It's a weird way to start the good weather, to kind of start off with a snub, right? I mean, it seems to me like, you know, even if you get into kind of like heated battles on Twitter or something like this, or people get a little upset, it seems like the good weather would be a great opportunity for people.
Or you're supporting their campaign challengers, but whatever.
Oh. Oh, campaign challengers. I can't figure out this puzzle.
Yeah. But, you know, it was of all the people to snub, you're snubbing me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a nice person to talk in person. You know, I might shitpost a lot on Twitter, but like, if there's like one thing I don't do who people are mad at, I don't walk across the street to avoid walking past them.
Yeah. I could tell you this had Sean really worked up this week too, as well. I mean, it was,
I thought it was funny. I wasn't mad.
No, like, just kind of like, you know, it was, let's
say my self-importance, my ego.
Yes. Your ego your ego flamed.
It was higher than normal.
Crazy. Well, listen, real quick before you got to take off. So what? Give us a little kind of sense of what's going on with the Harrisburg Merrill race. And if you get a chance to come back, then we could go into a little more detail. But just give us that quick update.
Yeah. So the Otto Banks, the charter school grifter, we have a couple of Republicans running for mayor out here in Harrisburg. One of them, Otto, bought a house back in August, hasn't used his utilities since, doesn't have a working hot water heater in the house. Didn't use the water at all in the months since moving in there. And the judge allowed him to stay on the ballot. You know, there is precedent to knocking people off the ballot because of their lack of utility usage to prove that they don't have residency. Otto was living in Swatara Township for the past 12 years, and was a Republican, and he works for the charter schools. He works for the Reach Foundation. He got a couple Trump contracts. You know, through HUD and stuff like that, I believe so. But I know he's like really involved in like a property management stuff with his organization, and you know, he didn't have a mercantile license to operate in Harrisburg and stuff like that. So fun stuff. But I have a hard out.
Yeah, he's got a hard out. So Sean Lynn, so you know, if we don't get to see you for the if you don't get a chance to come back, have an awesome weekend. And just to remind you that we will not be here next week, so we'll have to touch in 2 weeks as I'm gonna be out. So good luck on your call. And hey everybody, I'm gonna I'll play us out with a little music to make a little adjustment, and we'll be back right after this. Sean, take it easy, man.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day Pennsylvania State Police attacked striking UE members at the gate of Westinghouse in East Pittsburgh. 200,000 UE members went on an industry-wide strike on January 15th for a $2 a day raise. They were on strike against the big three, GE, Westinghouse, and the electric division at GM. It was part of the post-war strike wave that brought millions out onto the picket lines nationwide. By the middle of March, the UE had settled with GM and GE, but 75,000 Westinghouse workers were still out on strike. Westinghouse initially refused to negotiate at all. When they made a first offer, they falsely claimed theirs matched the GE and GM agreements. Federal mediators withdrew from the case in frustration, stating the company had made negotiations impossible. Then, on this day, Allegheny County Sheriff Walter Monahan and Governor Edward Martin called in 800 state troopers. Some were on horseback, others on foot detail. Many troopers arrived in cars with machine guns and tear gas. They patrolled the picket lines and nearby streets and set up roadblocks leading to the Westinghouse gates. They began to forcibly disperse the crowd of 1,000 picketers. Then they ushered through several hundred non-production workers. Some were pelted with eggs, others were struck in the face by some of the women strikers. Three UE leaders were arrested for refusing to shut down the sound system they used to blast staffers for crossing the picket lines. The state police stayed for the duration of the strike. The state police stayed for the duration of the strike to enforce injunctions against mass picketing and to ensure the crossing of picket lines. The strike finally ended after 115 days, with the strikers winning an 18-cent an hour raise. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
All right, so kind of a big week in news once again. The stuff to watch. We're probably going to make this a little bit of a shorter show today. My guess is that I was thinking initially that I'd give it an opportunity for Sean to have his call and he could come back, but my guess is going to be he's not going to get back in time. So I want to kind of like focus in on a couple of things, and maybe even touch upon a couple of things, especially in the PA section. That is. That I did not get a chance to put in the show notes, in part because as we were preparing for the show, Sean kind of like at that last minute got a notification that he was going to be called away at 11 o'clock. So here we are. So what's going on with Georgia Republicans this week? They have passed, and this is not the only, by any stretch of the imagination, the only attempts at voter suppression laws that are happening right now. But Georgia is kind of first out of the gates on this. This is going to be pretty dramatically affect what's going to happen in the future in Georgia. So you remember, just to kind of little recall, what just kind of happened there during the presidential election in Georgia. We know that both, say, directly former President Trump, Lindsey Graham, Mark Meadows, I think Giuliani was down there too as well. They were all putting direct pressure upon, say, the Secretary of State, and they were putting pressure on some election officials to basically not certify the vote, right, or to recount that or find additional votes that would allow Trump to take the victory, right? So the problem with that, of course, is that it's illegal, right? Well, there's court cases that are going on about that right now. But the Republicans know that, you know, the fact that not only did Biden win Georgia, but now you've got these two Senate races that that you know those runoff races that took place in January. Both of those races were won by Democrats. They were narrow victories, but that's pretty much the writing on the wall for Republicans in the state of Georgia. At least that's Republicans' concerns. It's something that they should be concerned about, given the fact that they've gone kind of off the off the edge of kind of right wing nut jobism. So that's going to be an increasing problem for them in Georgia. So instead of actually deciding, again, as we've seen this over and over and over again, instead of the Republicans deciding that, hey, maybe we need to get away from this kind of extremism, no, instead they're just looking for ways to further suppress the vote. So basically they're, use the 2020 the 2020 election and looking at where the legislature ran into barriers, where the legislature just couldn't strip the electors of their ability to make their choices. And they're basically cutting out the middleman of, I think it was the Secretary of State, which could make determinations or would make a determination about whether or not these elections, the vote should be certified. Now they're putting it in their own hands that they have control over it. Now, right now, the Georgia State Legislature is like dominated by Republicans, right? So what that translates into is that they want to make sure that they're going to be able to have control and the reins of power. So, like I said, this is not the only instance of new voter suppression laws. It makes total sense that they're coming out with them right now because, they're kind of trying to tee up a series of Supreme Court cases, I'm sure, because you have HB 1, right? Remember that House Bill 1, which is basically the For the People Act, it's called. And it is about expanding voting, access to voting for kind of more Americans. It's like, automatic voter registration, making sure that mail-in, there's the mail-in option, no excuse mail-in ballots, basically making the franchise, making it easier for people to vote, right? Anytime that they have, that people have a contact with, say, for example, if you go in right now, like say, for example, we have the motor voter law. I'm not sure if that's in absolutely every state, but the motor voter law is pretty awesome, right? You go get your, you sign up for your driver's license and you're signing things up on the screen or whatever, or there's somebody's asking you these questions and they ask you right then and there, do you want to register to vote? Are you registered to vote? No. Would you like to? And if you click yes, you can choose a party affiliation or not, right? And then there you register to vote. Right. And they're basically saying, well, instead of it just being just driver's license things, how about any time that you're a whole bunch of other government offices that you would have to kind of like produce identification for, or kind of show who you are, kind of apply for this stuff, that gives you the opportunity to register to vote there too as well. Right. And even some cases wanting to kind of do automatic voter registration, which would be fantastic. Right. So the For the People Act, that is, looking for that kind of expansive voting is going to push a whole, like, let me put it like this. It's that right now, if the filibuster is getting hung up, the filibuster is the big concern in the Senate, right? The For the People Act passed in the House. We know that there's no way it's going to get 10 Republican votes to be able to kind of to beat a filibuster. Right. There's no way they're going to vote on party lines. So that means the only way they're going to get these new voting protections passed is by eliminating the filibuster or instituting a talking filibuster through some sort of filibuster reform, right? They cannot go through reconciliation like they did just with the relief package, because this is not about a budgetary concern. This is about voting rights. They could also decide that they want to have a special cutout for kind of protections of democracy or something like this. But more likely than not, I mean, you're going to see that the For the People Act, the voting rights law, may be the thing that finally gets Democrats to end the filibuster, or at least reform it so it makes it much more difficult for Republicans simply just kind of like send an email and say, no, we're not going to vote for it, so we've got a filibuster, and then go sit at home. No, they'd have to show up, they'd have to make their arguments, they'd have to hold the floor, all that stuff. Joe Biden came out once again. He had a press conference. He was pressed on the filibuster issue once again and came out with his it was actually his first ever press conference, I should say. And he came out with a more full-throated kind of willingness to kind of end the filibuster, or at least significantly reform it so that it's a talking filibuster, than he ever has before. And that kind of public statement is going to put increasing pressure on people like Joe Manchin, who's basically, kind of been the defender of the filibuster, or Kristen Sinema, who's also been, now we're not going to end the filibuster, but to kind of maybe pass these kind of reforms. If that's the case, we may actually see that get moved forward. I've got a sneaking suspicion. I might be wrong about this. But there's also new legislation that's coming up through the House that's going to have restrictions on automatic weapons and call for universal background checks. I have a sneaking suspicion that they may go with that first before the Voting Rights Act, in part because we'd even mentioned this at the beginning of the show, and I'm sorry, this is one of the things that I wanted to have in there. Of course, we have, you know, this is like two consecutive weeks of kind of mass shootings that have taken place, the most recent in Boulder, Colorado this week. And this prompted, which freaked me out a little bit, because one of the people who was killed in that was named Kevin Mahoney, and it's always weird to see your own name in there, if it just kind of brings it that much more home to, like, you know, how random and how this could be anywhere those kind of situations are. The point being this is that may come forward. Those are common, you know, what we would call common sense gun regulations that basically make sure there's universal background checks, making sure that people are can't get like access to assault weapons, you know, that are designed for killing people, not animals. But right, we know that there's going to be a 100% Republican opposition to that. So I am, again, from basically on a couple things that I'm reading, it just got me thinking that what we might see here is we might see that bill come up, right, to go to the Senate first, have the Democrats not get rid of the filibuster for that, right? Allow it to be a party line vote in which the Republicans are going to just say, no, we're going to filibuster it, and that legislation will get stymied. And then that will become the reason, right, to get rid of the filibuster, because it is so present and is so, and this is such popular legislation, even among gun owners, that, you know, here we are. But we shall see. I mean, maybe not. Maybe they'll go right to the voting rights reform. The reason why I'm saying that is because I think that it's a super clear cut case of Republican obstructionism when we see the gun reform, gun protections. It's the voter expansion, the voter protection acts that have come forward, the For the People Act. There's going to be a lot more room for people to spin it, right? You know, partisan spin, in part because it gets more in the details of the particulars of voting. When it comes to universal background checks, when it comes to the ban on assault weapons, things like that, that's pretty straightforward, and it's got mass popular support. There's not a whole lot of like specific details that are involved in that. So we shall see where this goes. But anyways, the point being is that with that filibuster reform, which will allow Democrats to pass a significant legislation, because let's remember, Joe Biden and the Biden administration is saying what they're going to tee up next here is, yes, the Voting Rights Act, but also we've got climate legislation coming up, and we've got a massive infrastructure bill, which is coming up, which, again, Biden had met with some advisors last week to talk about, like, you know, what's like, how big is too big, and you know should we go modest, and all the economic advisors that he met with, apparently, according to reporting, have told, oh, look, go big, right? Going small is only going to hurt us. It's going to hurt you politically, it's going to hurt the country economically. You need to go big. So that infrastructure bill, which will have deep kind of connections to kind of climate legislation, kind of impacts on, you know, people's jobs, putting people back to work, building out a kind of like, say, renewable infrastructure, a whole bunch of stuff like this will be in that bill, and that will be coming up. That's something that could potentially go through reconciliation. Right. Once again, the Democrats have another shot at that this year. Another big bill like that, the reconciliation. But if they eliminate the filibuster, right, if they get rid of the filibuster, they may be able to go this through regular legislation, which would open it up for a very different kind of argument. So instead of it being strictly about budgetary issues, they could include other issues that are part of it too as well, right? So you don't have those restrictions that you do with reconciliation. So we shall see. The Republicans, on the other hand, their response to this is to find every way possible that they could go about restricting access to the franchise, like access to the right to vote. And that's what we see just happening in Georgia. There's a number of other cases across the country in which they're doing exactly the same thing. We're going to have to see. I'm sure that we're going to see similar bills that are continually coming up here in Pennsylvania. to do exactly that. Because look, as we know, is that in the 50-50 split in the Senate, the right now the Democrats represent, I can't remember, tens of millions of more people than the Republicans do. Right. Even though they're the same numbers of senators. Right. The Senate is becoming an increasingly anti-democratic institution simply because it represents an increasing minority of people in the country. Right. Simply because where people live. Right. That brings me to the other issue, which I did not bring up in today's introduction, was about my hat. Right. DC statehood. Right. So the legislation for DC statehood looks like it's going to be moving forward. There'll be hearings, and we may actually get this kind of vote. This is going to be pretty impressive. This is going to be pretty interesting to see what happens here. We remind you, then there was hearings this week about DC statehood, and you know, there was some Republicans were saying that, you know, how can you, you know, have DC can't become a state because it doesn't have a car dealership. Really, that's seriously one of the points that somebody made, right? And not only that is not a requirement of like statehood, right? It's not even factually correct. I mean, I lived in DC. There are car dealerships in DC, in the district. So it's not even a factually correct statement, let alone something that has to do with actually statehood. There are other kind of ridiculous arguments that were being made by Republicans because look, they've got nothing. Right. They've absolutely got nothing. And when you start, you know, people say, well, you know, how can we do this? This is not what the founders want. I said, well, you know, that's not exactly true. Is it like either? And for that matter, if you look at what's happening kind of globally, is that, you know, other countries, this may come as a shock to you, but other countries also have capital cities. Right. And the residents of those capital cities. Right, are not disenfranchised. They don't have the right to vote stripped from them. Right? So, interesting. So it kind of like said, well, wait a minute. So we are actually an aberration. Like it's a very odd thing that in a democracy that you would have residents of your capital city disenfranchised and not allowed to vote in a democracy. How about that? Or allowed to vote, not allowed to have representation, we should say. They're allowed to vote for the president, right? Whatever, but they've got no one representing them in Congress. They got no one representing them in the Senate. They've got, you know, people who go and make their arguments, but they've got no vote. And Congress makes laws, right? And could override any kind of local laws that are passed by the district. And they make laws that basically determine what DC can and cannot do through its local governance board, right? So it's city council. So interesting, right? Taxation without representation, right? There you go. That's the hat. All right. I've got my license plate in my office, which I haven't been to in a year, but two as well. So the same thing, right? So taxation without representation. That's exactly what's happening kind of in Washington, D.C. And not to mention the fact that Washington, D.C., right, has more residents than Vermont. Montana. Maybe even Wyoming. I can't remember if that's true or not. Idaho, maybe, right? So you've got an area of the country that has more people than some entire states, right? Except the big difference is that those states have representation, right? And the District of Columbia, does not. And then, there's that one other really interesting fact about this, right? Is that those states that have hardly any population, right, also have hardly any people of color. Very few, right? They're white states primarily, right? And those white states have representation. The District of Columbia, however, not so much, right? District of Columbia is a majority minority. We're gonna have to find new words for that, right? The majority of its residents are people of color, right? Majority, right? And just so happens, it happens to be a pretty serious Democratic Party stronghold, right? it is hard for any Republican to get any traction in the district. I remember when I was, this is way back when, I don't mean to kind of like bring up, you know, like to upset people about electoral politics right now. But, you know, I remember back when Ralph Nader was running in the primary against Al Gore, right? That's when I lived in D.C. and the 2000 election, right? And I was campaigning for Ralph Nader at the time. Now, let me be clear, is that I was not one of these people that was saying you like Nader or bust kind of thing, right? I was not one of these people that said, you know, you should do that. I recognize like the reality of kind of electoral politics, right? I recognize that, you know, you need to beat George Bush, right? That was kind of like, it was clear. So like if you listen to Michael Moore back in those days, well, Michael Moore was basically saying, look, if you're in the state of Florida, right? If you're in the state of Florida, that is a really close state. That is, you know, that was before Florida went completely red, right? You don't want to vote for Nader, right? You don't want to vote for Nader in that context. You need every single vote possible in order to defeat Bush in that election, right? However, if you're in the District of Columbia, right, there's not a chance in hell, right, that the government that people are going to vote for Bush, right? And I can't remember the percentages, but it was like just, you know, crazy numbers, like, you know, 80-90% voted for Gore in that election. So the argument that I would have with people who are going in to vote about why vote for Nader had to do with kind of, you know, back in those days, you know, wanting to build like a that certain threshold, the 5% threshold, to be able to kind of get on the ballot for a party, like at the time. Right. And then you'd, you know, have these all these arguments with people that I won't get into and all that. But like that's how democratic of a place it is, the district. Right. It just wouldn't matter. Right. You try to explain like, look, there's no way that anybody else is, you know, going to get elected here. So that's a great like ground to actually help kind of establish a Green Party at that point. Right. I'm in a very different place on those things now, but not very different place, very similar place, but for different reasons. So anyways, that's getting way off the track. So that's what's going to happen. So DC statehood got some hearings this week. Republicans had absolutely nothing. And the Democrats are, look, there's some people that are absolutely surprising me here. The Democrats are actually, I think, are seeing that they can do things and have been winning those things and now are a little bit emboldened to do things that are very popular, right? And to do things that are going to potentially correct the anti-democratic tendency that we see right now in our governance, right? Because we've seen like both gerrymandering that's been going crazy. We see this voter suppression tax that's been going crazy and the increasingly anti-democratic kind of nature of the Senate. Those are all moving in the wrong directions if you give half a rat's ass about a democracy, right? So what are they doing? They're voting for going all in on more voter suppression, right? Which makes it more sense than ever that Democrats need to go all in on expanding the rights to vote, expanding representation, right? Deepen our democratic traditions, not try to narrow them, right? Expand democracy, not return to aristocracy. That's the idea. So anyways, speaking of aristocracy, or maybe we should be saying plutocracy, we also saw hearings this week about the role that social media companies played in the January 6th election, or I'm sorry, insurrection. And that was fun. And that was all taking place as we see this historic election that is going on, union election that's going on in Bessemer, Alabama, where Amazon workers, right, are in the middle of voting. I think the voting ends at the end of March about whether or not Bessemer will be the first fulfillment center that will be represented by a union, right? People have already, there's lots of takes about this, lots of excellent reporting out there about the ways that this election, this union election, if they win this, is going to be huge. And it will be the kind of like, you know, you're basically breaking the glass at that point. You're basically showing people that it can be done, right? What's interesting, however, is that in some ways the glass has already been broken, right? Is that there's no going back now. Because even if they lose this election, which I really, I don't know. I really honestly don't have, I mean, you hear a lot of people having takes about it. but it's, you just don't know with these things, right? Have been part of union elections before. You don't know how those things are going to go, right? You can never count your chickens when it comes to kind of voting a union election, especially given the intense intimidation that Amazon has been involved in when it comes to its workers. Forcing them to go to meetings, these kind of captured audience meetings where they kind of fill you with all this anti-union propaganda, getting kind of moles to try to kind of destroy the union, lying about people, getting people fired for the union organizing, activities. They even changed the timing on the traffic light outside of the plant so that organizers couldn't like have time to talk with workers who had to stop at the stoplight. I kid you not, right? So this is going to be huge. So, we're going to find out what goes on. And in the midst of all this, you started hearing stories from workers about how, they're forced to work such intense schedules, right? In particular, the drivers, but not just the drivers, that, that they are reprimanded if they don't hit these kind of like, the timer marks, these time marks and their quotas, right? So there's no time to stop. If they stop to grab a bite to eat, if they stop to go to the bathroom, that puts them behind schedule and makes it that much more dangerous, right? And then they get reprimanded for not meeting their quotas. So what you find is that you have, in a number of cases, you've had workers reporting that they just pee in bottles, right? So that they actually have a plastic bottle that they drive around with, right? Instead of trying to go find a bathroom and taking a break, they'll just pee in the bottle to keep on going, right? And Amazon came out this week, right? And they're like, yeah, whatever. You can't believe it. You can't believe this. These are just stories. This is the unions making it up, blah, blah, blah. They actually came out and said, quote, you don't even really believe the peeing in bottles things, do you? If that were true, nobody would work for us. Well, maybe they should have held on to that little take a little bit because The Intercept published this week this piece by Ken Klippenstein, who basically reveals got the documents, right, got the receipts, and shows that there's correspondence internally, right, from Amazon executives, right, talking about the bottles of pee that they keep on finding in the trucks, right, and in some cases, right, there's been poop in plastic bags, right. You've got workers, right, who are so worried about losing their job that they feel they can't even stop to go to the bathroom, right? And so they have to poop in bags. I mean, that is like the lowest of the freaking low, right? Am I right? It just blew my mind. So I want to read you a piece of the letter, right? So this was a letter. This came from Jen Snyder. She's the on-road area manager with Amazon Logistics, right? And she was writing to basically a series of other managers, supervisors, and says, this evening, an associate discovered human feces in an Amazon bag that was returned to the station by a driver. This is the third occasion in the last 2 months when bags have been returned to the station with poop inside. We understand that DAs may have emergencies while on road, especially during COVID. DAs have struggled to find bathrooms while delivering. Regardless, DAs cannot return bags to the station with poop inside, right? And then a little bit later on, so these behaviors are unacceptable and result in a tier one infractions going forward. Please communicate this message to your drivers. I know it may seem obvious or something like or like something you shouldn't need to coach, but please be explicit when communicating the message that they cannot poop or leave bottles of urine inside bags. Okay. So, and there's more, right? That's just one of them. It actually shows specifically documents which, they articulate this. They talk about the numbers of violations this has gone on. Well, there you have it. And then after Amazon had denied it, you had a bunch of workers that came out and said, no, this is it, right? They handed over some documents. They handed over this because they knew that Amazon was just out there lying, right? And so that was pretty crazy. So this is going to be quite a fight. That comes in the wake of course, Bernie Sanders heading down there to do this. And then again, another big kind of social media fail by Dave Clark, an Amazon executive, who basically said, come on down, Bernie. Yeah, you claim to be progressive, but we actually deliver on the goods in the midst of like increasing revelations about how horrid it is to work like one of these Amazon things. One of the stories that I was reading this week basically said that Amazon basically at some of its facilities has hired ambulances, right? And I think this is in the past tense. This was kind of exposed a bit back, but I had hired ambulances at one point to be on call outside the factory because so many people were getting hurt. So basically, it was more cost effective for them to have ambulances waiting for the injured workers than it was to actually change working conditions to prevent the injuries. That shows you where their priorities lie, right? There you go. Crazy, crazy. Another big news this week when it comes to strikes. Oh, I was mentioning once again, there's a strike in Italy for Amazon workers. That's pretty cool. But there's a, you know, heating up strike at Columbia grad workers. This is a story that we reported on an Out to Coop podcast for a couple of weeks in a row now. You've got these student workers, or these graduate workers, I should say, that have been in, you know, negotiations for over 2 years to try to get their first contract after they voted to bring in a union. This comes after nearly 5 years after the National Labor Relations Board first ruled that graduate student workers at Columbia were entitled to collective bargaining, right? They still do not have the contract, right? They are, you know, you have these stalled negotiations over kind of a bunch of issues. And like I said, some of it has to do with payments. Some of it has to do with representation. They want to basically bring in kind of neutral arbiters when it comes to issues of discrimination or harassment because they didn't trust the university. Apparently, there had been a history of the university kind of pressuring students, pressuring workers to not report or not to take allegations further. Want to make sure that you have all workers are covered with insurance, you know, a bunch of stuff like this. One of the things that I found especially interesting about the contract, which I talked about last week, one of the things that they're trying to keep in the contract is preventing a no-strike clause. Right. So a lot of union contracts, what they do is say, OK, we signed this contract. And as part of signing this contract, one of the things that we choose to give up is the right to strike. So as long as the terms of the contract are in effect, the union does not strike. And if they do strike, then it's a violation of the contract. People get fired and things like this. They also want to kind of make sure that they hold on to that, which, you know, basically I think is becoming increasingly a smart choice for workers to really hold fast on that. Because what we found, I mean, this is true in my own union in ABSCUF, where you have, you know, yes, you got a contract and yes, now there's a no strike clause, but you find that the administration just basically uses everything at its disposal kind of destroy your working conditions. And you know, then you're told even kind of internally with the union, well, you can't strike and then you could lose your job because if you strike, you're violating the contract, right? So it basically puts a kibosh on worker power. So this is another kind of cool thing that is going on with that strike. And it seems it's a bit catchy, maybe, right? Because we find right down the street down there at NYU, graduate student workers at NYU began voting on their own strike authorization on Tuesday. That's going to go on for a week, right? So this coming up Tuesday, we will be get the results of that, and we'll see if they're going to kind of call for a strike as well. And that comes after 9 months of negotiations that have led nowhere. And actually, in that case, the graduate student union negotiators have made significant concessions to the university. Still, the university kind of wants to roll it back. Right. So these are kind of, again, fights against the anti-union push. And I think that the fact that you've got I don't know if I want to go as far as to say a pro-worker National Labor Relations Board at this point, but usually you don't have an anti-worker one like you had under the Trump administration and previous administrations. They're feeling that this is really the good time to push. So we shall see. The last thing I want to drill on a little bit down a little bit on the kind of opening segment today was just that Rutgers University has just released its kind of initial protocols for the fall. And basically what that means is that they're basically saying that if students want to return to the fall to their campuses, that they're going to have they need to be vaccinated. And they say this is kind of a statement from Rutgers president Jonathan Holloway, basically said, adding COVID-19 vaccination to our student immunization requirements will help provide a safer, more robust college experience for the students. Students will be required to have proof of vaccination before they're allowed to kind of move into a dorm or attend in-person classes. They're also setting up a clinic, right? So basically that it will make those vaccinations available for those students coming back to Rutgers. Now, Rutgers has, I believe it's roughly 70,000 students. So it's, more than 70,000 students among three campuses, which is a significant number, obviously. And this is one of the first universities to come out with these kind of vaccine mandates, and I expect to see more of that. What's interesting to see is how the ways that Rutgers has tried to get out in front of this, right? And I should also make it clear that that they're strongly urging faculty and employees, right, to be vaccinated, but they have not required them to do so. That raises a big question about, well, why would be the case, especially if they're more at risk, but be that as it may, that's where it is at this point. All faculty and employees and students on campus will be required, however, to participate in the university's testing program. And the university expects to continue offering some hybrid courses to prevent overcrowding in classrooms this school year. Why this is really significant is because Rutgers, again, using science-based principles here, is making determinations about what it's going to do in the fall, fully recognizing that COVID's not going away. Right. And we're seeing this, you know, kind of right now where, you know, the numbers are beginning to spike once again in New Jersey, right, where Rutgers is located, and in Pennsylvania and many states throughout the country. Right. Especially as we're seeing these, you know, variants of COVID-19 increasing. There's that. While you look at a bunch of the maps out there. Right. I know that a lot of people are feeling good because vaccines are rolling out. We saw that, you know, the Biden administration hit the, you know, they said we're going to have 100,000 vaccines in the first 100 days. They hit that promise at the, I think it was like the 64th day or 65th day for that. So now he just basically recently just doubled down and say, oh, no, we're going to go for 200,000 the first, million. Sorry, 100 million, 200 million in the first 100 days. I think that's right. And that they're kind of like, you know, up in the ante on that, which is pretty awesome. So we shall see. We shall where this goes. But I'm watching that very carefully, in part because obviously, you know, I teach at Kutztown University, which is part of the state system of higher education, something we'll talk about in the next segment too as well. I'm at a university, which I have a university president who's, you know, basically, you know, throws caution to the wind. Right. And wanted to open everything up. And it's been, you know, it's been really hard on students. It's been hard on faculty. It's been a disaster in terms of rollout. It's, you know, even though he's getting all the kudos in the world from the chancellor, people have concerns. And so why not start precautions and planning for the fall? And this is what Rutgers is doing. They're looking ahead, looking at the best science and what's going to happen in the fall, and saying these are going to be the requirements. Now, I bet you that if we get to the fall, we find out that, you know, COVID's gone, that Rutgers will change. But guess what? If you change at that point, you're changing for the better, right? You've actually done your due diligence to keep safety and move forward. Anyways, so we'll see. We'll continue to follow that for here. All right, I'm going to take a quick break and talk about a couple of things here in Pennsylvania. I'll leave some things open for Sean if he's able to come back. If not, we'll just have to try to tack that on to the next time that we're on. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I'll be back right after this quick break.
So, like this past weekend, there was a thing with Otto Banks getting, staying on the ballot. But what we have going on in Harrisburg with the politics right now, you have two Republicans that are running as Democrats. You have Otto Banks, who's a charter school grifter, who works for the Reach Foundation, involved with the Commonwealth Foundation and the school voucher movement. He was a Democrat city council member back in the 2000s, who became a Republican. Moved outside the city, and then he just moved back into the city and became a Democrat.
Sorry, apparently my audio was off, so that's corrected now. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Sean. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Otto Banks moved back into the city this past year. Well, he didn't move back into the city. He just bought a house to put his residency in the city. You know, he didn't have a hot water heater. He didn't use his water at all. you know, like, and the judge said that he can, you know, he has residency, established residency, even though there's legal precedent for this type of case. A couple years ago, when after Leslie Acosta in Philadelphia went to jail, this type of case was brought up for the candidate the Democrats picked. And this is how we got Emiliano Vasquez as a representative through a write-in campaign, because the handpicked candidate was thrown off the ballot. Vasquez was actually a pretty cool state rep. He was only there as a placeholder, but it was fun talking to him. He had like a fuck this shit attitude, like when going to like Daryl Metcalf committee meetings and stuff like that. And then we also have this guy named Dave Schankweiler, who's running for office in Harrisburg. He is a Trump Perry Republican who became a Democrat. He runs the he's the board member or the director of Harrisburg University, which is a for-profit university here in Harrisburg. And he's being funded by like all the people who plunged Harrisburg into generational debt through the incinerator with Stephen Reed and stuff like that. So we have this really like corrupt business person, or he's being backed by the corrupt business establishment who were responsible for looting the city, like legitimately looted the city's assets. Who plunged the city into generational debt because of fucking up the incinerator with the bond issue and everything. And now this is who they're running for mayor out here in Harrisburg. So, you know, fun times all around. And then we got some of the drama with like the city candidates that are running for city council. But, you know, I think that this stuff with Otto Banks will get appealed. We'll see. You know, the Harrisburg politics are very racially, it's a minority majority city, and the racial dynamics are there. So like, you know, Wanda Williams, who is the city council president, she'll greatly benefit, you know, if Otto Banks gets kicked off the ballot. You know, she might have a shot at winning because of that. I don't see Schankweiler winning, but the funny thing about Schankweiler is he's a Democrat trying to, you know, window dress by hiring a couple of Democrat consultants to run his campaign. But he's also hiring like far right wing consultants. He's hired a group called Churchill Media to run his stuff. He gave like $20,000 to like some fucking Bible thumper from Liberty University who works for Churchill. And there's a blog post of like this guy defending Jerry Falwell Jr. in his latest scandal with like the pool boy and the wife and stuff like that. So there's that. And then he also hired, he has a consultant that's working for him who made like $50,000 last year from like right-wing campaigns out in Western Pennsylvania, like, you know, the Republican state Republican. So you just type in this person's name, pops up on the, you know, the database, campaign finance database. This shit ain't hard to find. It only takes less than like 5 minutes. You can do this.
Right.
And you can see how much money this kid made. And like on his Facebook page, he has this photo of him with posing with Nigel Farage at like a young Republicans event here in Pennsylvania. So like, this is who like Schankweiler is hiring to run his campaign and stuff like this. I don't see Schankweiler getting 1,000 votes. I posted a bunch of this information trying to poison the well a bit for Schankweiler in the Facebook groups, and a lot of people are pissed off about it. It's almost like you're insulting the voters of a city. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Harrisburg is not a mixed city as it was. Like, not mixed, but like moderate city, moderate Democratic city as it was maybe like 20, 30 years ago. It's a pretty progressive city. You know, like Midtown is a very progressive neighborhood. It's the base of the progressive movement here. And then you have like, you know, you have the other areas of the city like Allison Hill, the minority-majority spots of the city, uptown, like you're not going to get a Republican like this in office. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And at this point, you're just insulting voters like for this. Schankweiler is already blowing money on like TV ads that are being placed all throughout the region, not just in Harrisburg. Like, you know, like, and so you're just wasting money on that. He's just wasting fucking money on stuff. To sign their petitions. I told them get lost, which that was fun. You know, normally that. I don't do that type of stuff with like petitions. Like, you know what I mean? Cause it's a hard thing to do is get on the ballot. I mean, yeah. But I told them to beat it. Like, I'm not fucking signing a petition for a Republican trying to become a mayor of a city. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, that's just an update here in Harrisburg. You know, politics as usual.
Nothing but good. Nothing but good.
I think Pappin Foods is going to win re-election. You know, it's kind of like looking like that. I know. I mean, the city is in a spot where we're getting $48 million in COVID money. We're going to get another $53 million going into the school district. You know, times are good. Business is booming pretty much through this pandemic. And no, I could just see like it's at this point, it's good voting for the status quo. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem if Wanda Williams wins because it's part of that status quo. Mm-hmm. But like Shankweiler and Banks can really fuck things up if they win somehow, like, you know, through just being Republicans. Like Banks wants to sell the school district. Shankweiler will privatize anything and everything possible. While like Pappin Foods over the past so many years, you know, built a public works program in the city, you know, like the trash company, the trash revenue, like we are making money, millions of dollars a year due to trash services and contracting our trash services out with other cities or other townships in the area. Like, who would have thought you can run government like a business and make money off those services?
There you go. There you go. That's fantastic.
But I mean, like, it's just, is what it is. You know, I think Shankweiler should rename Harrisburg University Stephen Reed University, because that's pretty much like what we're getting at. But yeah, I mean, that I guess that's my like little like update on Harrisburg politics out here.
Nothing but joy, man. Nothing but joy.
Yeah,
it's actually really interesting. I mean, it's like I do find it absolutely fascinating because you have to be able to read what's going on there, like through what's happening underneath, right? I mean, if you have people that are kind of say relatively people who don't necessarily pay attention to politics all the time, right, are just going to see like, you know, names on ballots and things like this. But to see what's actually happening underneath there and the kind of like right-wing plays and deception that are actually going on beneath the surface, right? The kind of, you know, some of the kind of like, I don't know if you want to call it all-out corruption or kind of like corruption adjacent moves being made by some candidates, you know? I mean, that kind of stuff is something else. I mean, it literally is.
And it's not like, and it's not like it's like a big city. I mean, Harrisburg is 50,000 people, but like you get 5,000 people or you get 1,000 people in a city where you only need like, it's a primary that's going to decide the general election because we're a Democratic majority city. Like you get 3,000-4,000 votes, you're mayor, like in a primary. Like, I mean, so it's like, you know, if you get 500 or 1,000 votes, you can really fuck things up.
Yeah.
Like on the ballot. And then like Otto Banks has his own like, you know, the people running Otto Banks' campaign, the guy should have been in jail twice already for, you know, corruption. The former solicitor for the school district who was the reason why the school district got audited and, you know, in the receivership. You know, he was a solicitor in Coatesville. He should have been, you know, like plunged the city school district into Coatesville and just like. Yeah, I mean, it's corrupt nepotism all around. It just depends, like, which form of corruption that you want, like, at this point.
It's a great way to put it.
And I mean, like, the people, like, I think Harrisburg is at a point where it's past the years of having Linda Thompson and Stephen Reed and just these incompetent, corrupt mayors running things. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's like, you know, we're finally getting out of Act 47 receivership for the state. You know, the city's been in receivership for the past like 10 years now. You know, it's getting out of receivership and there's a federal courthouse going in, like a brand new courthouse in Midtown or Uptown, you know, on that border of like Uptown and Midtown. There's going to be a new state archives building going in because the archives building right now is a fucking tinderbox that is not climate controlled. And you have artifacts from the founding of this, like, the prehistory of Pennsylvania through like the founding of the Commonwealth, just sitting in this thing. And just like, if it's like a paper mill, if it catches fire, you're losing the whole entire history of the Commonwealth. So, I mean, there's big projects happening right now in Harrisburg. The street down right outside my apartment is going two ways. You know, Second Street, typically like a highway, was designed to be a highway going outside the city. That's being converted back into a two-way street for the first time since like the 1950s or the 1960s. There's major projects going on, and it's just like the city's booming right now. And it feels like, as an outsider who's been here for a while, it feels like we're finally getting ready to uncork.
Well, I just say, bring the trolleys back, man. Bring the trolleys back. That's what I want to see.
Oh, I would love to have them do that.
Seriously. I mean, yeah. That's one of the things you got, right? I mean, you know, one of the things that I think that could make like Harrisburg also kind of explode in terms of its kind of vibrancy, you know, is actually, you know, not having to kind of decrease the car traffic in there. So if you've got like whatever, you know, parking garages or things like this that people are commuting into the district, okay, so have them like outside the immediate city limits, and where you can stop, get on and hop on a trolley and head it to work. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think that would be awesome.
I would love to see a regional rail out here.
Totally. Like
going from Shippensburg or Chambersburg.
Look, the fact that you've got like the capital city of Pennsylvania, right, is like difficult to reach like by any other means other than car for the vast majority of people in the state, right, is deeply problematic, right? I mean, it just messed up.
Or for people in the area.
Fair enough. Yes.
I mean, sometimes like during rush hour, it'll take you 45 minutes just to go from like Harrisburg to Camp Hill because of the bridges being jammed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, crazy. Well, kind of other kind of cool things going on. Once again, I mean, I'm sure that everybody's seen the kind of historic, kind of moment where PA's own Dr. Rachel Levine was confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health by the United States Senate this week. She even got Republican votes on that. How about that, right? So that's phenomenal, right, to see that. And my wife and I were talking a little bit about this last night. Yeah, I mean, we were talking about it last night. It's just like, you know, I really think that it's actually it's going to save lives. And I don't just mean that in terms of her capacity, in terms of like Assistant Secretary of Health, but I mean by having representation, right, about kind of saying that, you know, for all those, you know, kind of especially younger folks, right, who've been struggling with, with kind of gender identity stuff, thinking about, the, you know, these questions about kind of who they are and all this.
And at a time when Republicans are, I'm sorry, I think I'm a little bit delayed here, but like, and at a time when like Republicans are launching horrific attacks against the trans community in states across the country.
Exactly.
To continue their culture wars and stuff like that.
Exactly. So, I mean, to see these things happening, to see the attack that, I mean, the literally unprecedented number of bills that are going back that are targeting the trans community. So to see Dr. Rachel Levine have such a prominent role in making that historic appointment, I do think is going to help, right, bolster some of the, the kind of individuals who struggle, right, who are struggling with this and try to come to terms with their identity and try to come to terms with that. So that's phenomenal. So kudos to her. And, you know, I'm also glad to have her there too as well, because we're going to need all that we can when it comes to COVID-19, because this is not over. I mean, Chris Hayes on his show last night was basically talking about, this problem that we have. And I do think it's a problem. I don't know how far we can generalize it, if it's a human problem or if it's an American problem or whatever it might be. But, you know, 1,300 people died yesterday, right, from COVID-19. 1,300 people, right? And you remember, it wasn't too long ago when we hit that number of 1,300 people dying per day, we were in crisis mode, right? And now it's because we're not hitting 3,000 people dead per day, right? Then it feels like, good, it's over with, right? That we can move on to other things. And, you know, and I think like Hayes made, I think the right point last night. It's like, this is in part like a fault of the media and the media structure in this country, that they, you know, it's not the new thing, right? That's not where the controversy is. That's not where they're kind of like following the,
they're talking about the fake border crisis that the Republicans are making.
Right. No, exactly. Here, let me bring up your pick.
Sorry, my internet is going. And I mean, also you have like, you know, you also have like Governor Wolf, who is foolishly reopening, you know, easing restrictions everywhere, like just on Easter Sunday of all days, like symbolically. Like, I mean, we're at like 20% of this Commonwealth being vaccinated, at this point. Right. Like, I mean, it's still not enough. You know, like, I just feel like, what, we can't wait another 4 or 5 weeks just to, like, do this right, like, May or, like, middle of May? Like, when we get half the people, like, vaccinated, like, we're doing this now?
I hear you,
like,
man.
I mean, the people who are getting sick now won't be able to get vaccinated in, like, another 5 or 6 months.
Right. I hear you.
Like.
I hear you. I mean, it's like, I'm really concerned.
Look, it's beyond foolish.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's got this push pull, right? I mean, the thing is that I understand people want to get back to normal, right? Or whatever is quote unquote normal. You've heard me say this 1,001 times. I don't think we're ever going back to quote unquote normal. Right. I mean, as we see with what Rutgers is already planning.
I mean, we
hit
5,000 cases yesterday.
That's what I'm saying, right? I mean, it's going back up. And not only that, like I said in the intro today, is that a lot of these are the new variants, right? These more contagious variants, which means it's going to spread faster. And you know, the fact they're opening up for in-person full capacity dining in New Jersey, right? You know, that you're doing similar moves here in Pennsylvania, right? People are feeling. Because the vaccines are rolling out, because there's fewer cases that there have been before, because we've seen those curves, right, that they've been dropping in the number of cases, that people are relaxing. And I understand, right? But the virus is a virus, right? It's not going away. And so, you know, again, I mean, I hate to be like, you know, throw the wet blanket on the fire, so to speak, or, you know, throw the wet blanket on the good feelings or whatever. But it's like, you know, it really is really, really concerning. And
ready for a third wave.
Already seeing it in Europe. I mean, my friend Stu, right, is over there in Northern Ireland, right? I mean, they're already on lockdown again. We're seeing the spikes all over that's going on in Europe at the same time that you're getting these upticks of these kind of like anti-maskers over like in Germany and over in Spain and France and things like this. And now we see the cases rising again. And you look at what's going on in Brazil. I mean, let's remember, this is a pandemic, right? This is not a national problem. This is a global problem. And in Brazil, you've got kind of like cases going off the charts. With most of the states in Brazil that are they're kind of well over the 90% capacity of their the hospital capacity for COVID victims, I mean, and it's only going, the spike is going right up, and you got a kind of denier in chief down there in Bolsonaro, right? That impacts everybody, not just people in Brazil. And you know, then on top of that, if we talk about, you know, again, I was going to wait for 2 weeks from now before we really gonna get into this. So because now there's been some really good reporting that's coming out about the lack of access to vaccine for the vast majority of the world's population, right? So that's gonna doubly impact it. Now you've got these, you know, again, these crises that are kind of popping up around AstraZeneca and some of the what they've been kind of doing with their messaging and how that's actually kind of increasing kind of reluctance against the vaccine. I mean, all this kind of stuff is happening right now. And I understand that it's hard to continue to pay attention to this stuff, but man, you know, it's concerning to me. You know, I was going to talk about this in the last call today, but you know, I mean, I'm thankful. Bucks County, you know, I got the email from Bucks County last week, and I got my first vaccine. I got the Pfizer, got the first vaccine this past Tuesday. Right. I put my name in, right, you know, to the county website. And I got an email late Wednesday night basically saying, here it is. I signed up immediately and I got my first vaccine. It was very, very well run. People were like, I mean, literally like elated there. Right. People were standing in lines. They were happy. They were joking and everything like this. And you could tell people felt palpably better that they were getting the vaccine. Right. But that's, you know, again, even then, you know, the second round is 21 days down the road. That's 3 weeks away. And like, you know, your full protection doesn't kick into something like an additional 21 days after that. Right. So, I mean, even when I get the first round of the vaccine, even if you get the second round of vaccine, you still going to have to use the mitigation protocols. And I know it's hard, folks.
Yeah.
I know it's hard, but crazy, crazy, crazy. All right, let me let me want to talk. I was going to go here, but I'm going to. Now that Sean came back, I won't go into it in detail on this. But I want to kind of plug once again Cyril Michalejko. He's a progressive columnist for the Bucks County Courier, Times, and Intelligencer. He will be on. He will be on the show on April 5th, right? If you remember, I talked about him last week. He's got a column that is kind of a new column, like I think it's like 2 weeks old now, that will be a progressive a progressive voice in PA or in that column. And after this is after years and years of them privileging them by, I mean by the okay, so Sean is doing this again to me. Here we go. Oops. I'm sorry. I am so messing up everything here today. It's pretty crazy. Where is she? There we go. I'm going to take that out since he put his beautiful room back on. anyways, by years, they've been platforming some serious kind of right-wing folks, both in columns and newspaper. They've given a platform to like a podcaster who's a right-wing podcaster, which I don't want to kind of give them any kind of signal boost here whatsoever. But finally, they agreed, and I'll let him tell the story when he comes on the podcast, but they agreed to basically bring him aboard as a progressive columnist. And his first, you know, he came like out of the gates on fire. About the kind of the progressive upturn in Bucks County, which is absolutely fantastic. His latest article, his latest piece came out this on Thursday, late Wednesday night, actually, in the Bucks County Courier Times, and focusing on what's going on in Pennridge High School District, or the Pennridge School District, right, particularly the high school, where you've had a chapter of Turning Points USA that has basically made inroads into the school, recruiting students to, you know, recruiting students as part of his thing. And it reminds you that, you know, we've reported on Turning Point USA in this for years. And, you know, they are, you know, at, you know, best case scenario, they're kind of like white, kind of white nationalist, white supremacist adjacent organization that has followed all sorts of, you know, transphobic stuff. You've got followers of QAnon and all this stuff within this. You've got all sorts of kind of racist and, you know, anti-democratic tendencies within Turning Point USA, especially at the college level. But now they've kind of put in a bunch of funds to make sure that they can get it out in the high schools. And that's what they started doing. And some photo surfaces for the past a couple years ago where Turning Point USA had literature tables inside the school, handing out stuff, signing up people and all there. And when the school district was questioned about this, about giving them access to these, you know, identified hate organizations, how are you letting them recruit in the schools? You have members of the board and kind of that have been stonewalling journalists and individuals who have filed right to know requests to find out why is it they're allowing them to let this group like this into the school, given some of the restrictions that have been placed on other ones. This is also the school district, you remember, that came down hard on students who walked out in support of after the Parkland school shootings. They walked out in protest and walked out in favor of kind of like pushing for gun reform. And the school district came hard down on them. You've got a head of the school district. She's not the head anymore of the school board. I'm sorry. Who is like, you know, was a Trump delegate and has come out with all sorts of kind of like, you know, racist statements, kind of retweeted, you know, right-wing nationalist folks, who are white supremacists and QAnon folks, who had, and members who had kind of gone down to the, you know, insurrection thing. These are all people who are part of the school district. And so this is what he highlights in this article. So I'm really going to be very excited to have him on April 5th come and talk about this piece, talk about what he sees is going on in Bucks County here, and to push back a little bit on, you know, this notion that Brian Fitzpatrick is the best that we can do in the county. And I'm thrilled about that, because you've heard me talk about this in the podcast now for quite some time. About, you know, about the need to actually have a progressive push and actually seriously, you know, start to challenge the kind of, you know, I don't know, the legacy of the Fitzpatrick brothers as ruling the PA first. So, anyways, I'm sorry, Sean, I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, no problem. Did you see that one of the things that Turning Point's taken up is the 1776 project that Trump published the week before he was out of office? So they're going to be going ahead with this, like, pro-white propaganda, pretty much like I guess the only way to describe it is like the type of history that the Confederate Daughters of America, Daughters of the Confederacy or whatever, put out, like, you know, to the Lost Cause myth. I mean, this is exactly what this is like, the Lost Cause myth of the Civil War that these people are put out. And they're trying to rewrite history, you know, and to counter the 16 or the 1492 or whatever, like that, the 1492 project that scholars have signed on to.
Right. Yeah. The, you know, the Truth in History project, basically. Right.
Yeah. Basically saying, like, downplaying slavery and, you know, downplaying the found the founding of the America, downplaying all that fun stuff.
Absolutely. So he'll be on to talk about that. I'm very thrilled about that. And we've got some other stuff cooking too as well in Bucks County, which I'm extremely excited about. I'm not going to get out over my skis on this. But I've had a number of people recently, in part because of through these kind of networks, right? I mean, I tell you, this is what happens when you get someone like Cyril who gets a column in Bucks County, right? And then you start, say, retweeting stuff, you start sharing content, and suddenly it's like flushing people out of the bushes. Like, suddenly you find all these folks that are looking for, to build out connections. And so it looks like we're going to be doing some cool stuff with some other podcasters, right, in Bucks County. We're going to network with some kind of new media projects in the area, which I'm very thrilled about, but I'll have details kind of in a couple of weeks about that. But it's really exciting. I mean, you know, and I think that April 5th is going to be, I think I'm going to remember that moment, frankly, is that, you know, that for anybody who's been a long-term listener to the show, is that, you know, one of the things that has been my dream of Raging Chicken from the beginning is to kind of build out this network, right? Build out a kind of progressive network. And that doesn't mean establishing kind of like, you know, a Raging Chicken media empire, right? That has never been how, what I think is the model that you can do on the left, right? Because number one is that, you know, frankly, progressive funders are, they're not very generous when it comes to actually supporting projects like this. Right. It's really what it comes down to. I mean, they're wanted to, you know, they want their own thing. They want to do it on their own. They don't like kind of funding kind of independent projects. Right. They want to kind of control stuff. They want to have it internal. And, you know, they're not very good about funding kind of infrastructure stuff. So this has been also, you know, you've heard Sean and I talk about this over the years, that if you look at what happens in the right wing media will do things like not only just kind of like, you know, give you a grant for like, you know, like a stipend or something like this to cover some costs. They'll pay for your rent, right? They'll pay for office space. Right. And those are the hardest things for organizations to kind of deal with. Right? I mean, I can't even imagine what I would do if I had somebody said, hey, listen, we've got some office space. We're going to set you up. We're going to do a studio. Right. If you remember kind of a couple of years back, this is what I wanted to do with the Citizen Media Project. Right. And that, for a variety of reasons, I'm not going to go into again, that just, we couldn't get that off the ground. It wasn't enough. There were people being pulled in too many directions at once. And a couple of things just kind of, you know, fell through that I wish hadn't. But that was kind of the whole idea, is to have a hub, right, where you could begin to coordinate some of this networking stuff. So anyways, I'm getting way ahead of myself in ways that I promised I wouldn't today. But so I'm very excited about this possibility about, say, building up some kind of networks. And while I'm talking about that, I also want to give a huge plug for I am more excited about this than I've been excited about things in a while, but I want to give a plug to the Sisters of the Night Caucus. Yes, that's right. Everybody right now, if you are listening to this, you should be heading over to Twitter right now and look at the Night Caucus. There's a link in today's show notes at the Night Caucus. Sisters of the Night Caucus is going to be an amazing project, is going forward with some amazing women across the state. You've all heard talk about Shanna Danielson. Shanna Danielson is going to be a member of this, and you know, she's a fan of the show. She's been on our call today. She's the one that helped me today realize that, yep, my mic is off. Just greatly. But they're going to have some amazing work coming up. I'm just going to direct you, instead of running through all, I try to tell you all about their background and all about what goes on, I'm just going to direct you to their Twitter page. They've got, it's so worth going through the pin tweet right at the top. You're going to introduce each of the people that are taking part of them. There's, you know, I can't say enough about it. I'm just going to leave it at that.
While you're at it. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, while you're at it, you should go follow Jillian Kratzer's Twitter account.
Just about to say that.
At yep. Jillian Union.
Yep.
And watch the video. She does awesome TikToks of like PA politicians tweeting and posting dumb shit to their Facebook and Twitter accounts. And this last one she posted a few days ago is really good, and it's been taking off, and really just like points out the hypocrisy of Republicans yelling about cancel culture and banning books when Republicans have been, as Jillian said, banning books in schools as long as books and schools have been around.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And as and Shanna right now is basically saying, yeah, she just interviewed for local news today because of her John Joy's TikTok, the one that Sean's just talking about. I mean, I've been following her for a while on TikTok, and I've just loved her content. She's going to be a member. She is one of the people from the Sisters of the Night Caucus. That's what you expected. So this is their pitch. It's Sisters of the Night Caucus, bewitching political talk from all your favorite PA witches. Once again, head on over to at the Night Caucus, at the Night Caucus on Twitter. I will, when we come back after our break for next week, and we kind of come back to this, I'm going to give you kind of much more of the lowdown. And I know they've got some stuff rolling out, and I don't want to get kind of ahead of myself here, or ahead of kind of where they're at, but I can't wait to give every kind of signal boost I possibly can. I mean, not that they need it, right? Because it's just going to be amazing. It's going to take off like crazy. I'm so thrilled about it. But I hopefully that we're going to find points of intersection too as well, between the work that they're doing, the work that we're doing, and some of the other folks in here. So I'm very thrilled about that. You know, this is something that, whatever, just makes me fill with joy. What can I say? Okay, one last thing I want to kind of mention. The other thing that happened this week too as well is that you recall last week we talked about what Posse Chancellor Greenstein, Dan Greenstein, had done by calling for the dissolution of Posse at a recent hearing, basically saying that unless he got his way, he's going to, introduce a package of legislation calling for the to dissolve Posse. That kind of basically exploded in his face a little bit this week. The union has come out strongly, kind of like basically saying that this is inappropriate. This was kind of like destructive. This is kind of like, you know, a failure of leadership. There is now petitions that are beginning to circulate, calling for votes of no confidence. There's all sorts of pushback coming from alumni. And
yeah,
so
that's
on.
Like.
Go on, sorry.
No, I mean, like, Representative Schweier released a really strong word statement basically calling a failure last week and his agenda. Pretty much called him and pretty much compared him to, like, nothing more than the appropriations chair, the Republican appropriations chair, with the way he's been acting, and he's been failing to secure funds for PASHI and advocating for PASHI. But, yeah, that's what I was thinking last week. Like, I'm surprised. I'll be shocked if a vote of no confidence doesn't happen after what happened with this.
Yep.
I think it was politically stupid when he said it then and when I heard it for the first time. And it's just like, to have the governor come out against it and have a couple representatives come out, and there were representatives like who are pretty fairly conservative Democrats who came out and were like supporting Schweier's statement, like Gerald Mullery and others, like Greenstein obviously didn't know this, but like half the fucking General Assembly went to a PASHI school.
Right.
Like literally a third to half of the people, Republican and Democrats in Harrisburg, elected in Harrisburg, went to a PASHI school.
Like, exactly.
You know, and for him to say that, like, is just just really ignorant. Yeah, and I'm speaking as someone who was an intern with PASHI. And, you know, like, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for that internship I had with APSCoF.
Yep.
With the union. I mean, I just, like, it, you know, when leaving APSCoF my last day, you know, moving back home, pretty much, like, figured out, like, you know, it wasn't until that, like, internship that I figured out what I wanted to do and that I wanted to be in Harrisburg working. You know, and like, you know, here I am today because I don't know where I would be.
You're welcome, Sean. You're
and
welcome.
Thank you for you.
You're welcome, Sean.
I know. No, I mean, like, you know, I said this, like, I was a very bad student in college and didn't figure things out to like the last like semester of what I want to do. And it's just like it's I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that internship. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and that's just like how it is. And it's just like, the value of that system, like, it's affected a lot of people in those same ways.
Indeed, indeed. Indeed, indeed. So let me talk a little bit about this. One other thing that kind of exploded, and I think you're absolutely right, right? And the other thing that kind of came out this week is that as all this was heating up around about the package of legislation calling for dissolution of the of it, let me see if I can. I hope I didn't get rid of this. Okay, good. So the chancellor finally came out with a statement that said this. It said that, you know, he apologized. I understand the manner in which I conveyed this information left an impression for some that dissolving the state system was a preferred course of action. Nothing could be further from the truth, he said. He said he was just kind of laying out some kind of options about where we are, blah, 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 blah. Now, if you watch that hearing, that was disgusting. So I'm just going to read to you what I wrote. I just a post that I wrote in response to this because it's going to say it better than I will, and it will prevent me from going on too long. Okay. So this is what I said. When he says, just what I said, I understand the manner in which I conveyed the problem. When I say, let's be clear. The issue was not that he messed up his manner, thereby leaving an impression for some that dissolving the system was preferred course of action. The issue was that he levied this statement as a threat, using fear as a way to try to strong arm, in oh so sympathetic tones, of course, legislators, members of the Board of Governors, faculty, staff, students to accept his plan. It's a classic tactic of political persuasion. When the particulars of a policy are a flop, turn to fear to move the needle. And please don't tell me he doesn't know this, seriously. Right. So let's okay. The game that guy is playing is nothing but like it's filled with lies, smoke, and mirrors. Right. And if you talk to people that have had to deal with him, right, in negotiations behind the scenes and some of the fits that he throws in other kind of context, you can see this. One of the things I noted last week when I was, or actually this week at the beginning on Out to Coop Live, was that how I thought he was so agitated at this hearing. He was moving all over the screen and everything like this. And that was the first time that I saw, because I've heard multiple stories about people who've had to deal with him behind the scenes outside of the spotlight, about how he flips off, how he can't stand it when people just don't accept what he says, right? And he throws his little temper tantrums. And you could see it. I could see it. And I was like, oh, that's him trying to control his temper tantrum right there, right? That's why his teeth gets all clenched and everything like this when he starts to talk. And so that's why he issued that threat. Right. And he plays it off. Right. I mean, this is that kind of Silicon Valley thought leader kind of mentality. Right. You put on the kind of woke veneer. Right. And then you institute like the harshest austerity. Right? I mean, that's kind of what it's all about. Right. That's what Silicon Valley brought to the conversation. Yes. Great innovations and all this other kinds of stuff, but also at a tremendous cost to kind of millions of people. So here we go. Right. You want to pee in bottles too? In Pashi? Hey, just follow Greenstein's plan. Maybe you too can keep a bottle in your classroom, right? Whatever. The other thing that came up this week, which I happened to come across or came into my possession, let's say, found out that the state system was actually putting out had hired an independent consultant, right? A branding and marketing agency called Ologie, right? They're an Ohio-based branding and marketing agency to basically do some market research about how to best rebrand those schools that are being forced to merger, particularly the ones in the Northeast, right? And what was interesting is that I've seen multiple examples of this. It's funny when you kind of just happen to mention, you know, it'd be great to see this, and now suddenly I'm flooded with like emails and all sorts of stuff from all over the state. Because this is also where you find out how many people are actually alumni of the Pashi system. When suddenly you start from people you haven't heard from in like, you know, 5-10 years are suddenly like, oh, yeah, I got one too. Here you go. And so, and basically, I just want to read you what they said. So I'll say Ologie, we'll say it like that. Ologie has partnered with Bloomsburg University, Lock Haven University, and Mansfield University to identify an integrated U name and messaging strategy that honors the individual names, legacy, and identities of each university. The new entity name will be used for accreditation purposes only, honoring a commitment to retaining each institution's name, logo, mascot, and identity. As part of this objective, research-based approach, your opinions will help inform the final name recommendation put forth at the Board of Governors meeting in April. Your identity will remain anonymous, and the survey should take no longer than 5 minutes to complete. Thank you for taking the time. Right? So that was the baseline of it. And what they're doing, it's you know, again, these things are always fascinating because it's, you know, that if you know anything about market research, particularly these kind of stuff, when you're actually, it's kind of more like a push-pull than anything else, right? What you're trying to do, you're trying to push a particular direction. You're trying to get people to kind of like identify with stuff. So they have these questions like, which of the following names would you feel most proudly associate with, right? So they're trying to get you to kind of put yourself in and having to identify. What they tell you in these cases, like, you don't get any other options or other names, right? They've chosen these things. Now, you can choose in some of the questions that say none of the above, but the three names that they're pushing out are Northeast University of Pennsylvania, Commonwealth University of Pennsylvania, or my personal corporate favorite, Bloomsburg University Group of Pennsylvania, right? So they're pushing this out to people. And I'll tell you is that alumni are freaking pissed. Right. You know, again, I can't speak for every single alumni, but certainly I've heard from enough people that are kind of disgusted by this, that they're doing this. They're spending how many hundreds of thousands of dollars to kind of hire a brand and marketing group while they're claiming that they have no money to market a name to force a merger. Right, against the will of at least one of the universities. Right. We talked about, we've had the folks on the show from Lockhaven University. And the thing that kind of got me the most about this, especially what communities have continued to kind of ask questions about the economic impact of actually eliminating some of the, you know, individual universities, what's been pretty remarkable is seeing a situation in which the names, the literal names of Lockhaven and Mansfield, right, and Bloomsburg in two of the three cases have been eliminated from those names. The names of the communities in which these universities are housed are kind of erased. And you also heard me talk about this on Monday night, right, on Out to Coop Live, is that's at the same time we find out that there's all these kind of independent contracts that are going out and that they just hired, right, a consulting group called Everspring, which is a educational technology group, right, to basically take over a bunch of the educational technology delivering systems to help with the merger and the, you know, the Pashi's plans, and Greenstein's plans. So, you know, you've got all this stuff kind of going on while this guy continues to pretend that, oh, he's just trying to help everybody out, right? They've already got their conclusion, even though they're not sharing that. They're not answering basic questions from that the faculty have had, that staff have had, the community members have had, the city councils have had. They refuse to answer basic questions. Meanwhile, they already got their plan that they're pushing through hard. So there you have it. So check this out. If you didn't get a chance to hear my discussion of some of this stuff, you can check it out on Out to Coop Live. That's available in our podcast. But just know we'll be obviously digging in much deeper on this this Pashi stuff here too as well. So anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
Nope, I'm good.
All right, good.
I'm just enjoying some peanuts right now.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're enjoying the peanuts, and I'm glad I've got your picture up there. Instead of just Sean Kitchen or you eating peanuts. So that's great. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with this week's Last Call. We'll be right back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month.
simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's our last call. And I'm like, I'll tell you, today I'm a little bit relieved that we're at the last call, because it's been like, everything has kind of gone like upside down today. So, I mean, I think, you know, I'm like, well, I'm kind of fairly well rested. Had kind of some show plans going to go over here, but between kind of like, you having to kind of take that last minute call, between my mic being kind of screwed up.
I mean, it just shows that like my work isn't performative politics.
Your work isn't performative politics. Is that so? How does that work?
It's not a brand. It's not, or I don't know. I think I messed it up. it's not just a joke. You know, I actually do work. You know, it's not a inside joke with Mahoney all the time.
No. I mean, he does work. You know,
some work.
Sometimes.
I was talking. So like, I'm working on a project. I can't really talk about too much about it, but someone who like was, ooh, you know, we were talking to, you know, got around the question, like, man, you really like what you do. You know, I can see you're all over, you go around doing things, you know, I hope you're getting paid for it. Just like, yep, I am. It is my job. So.
Yes, I was talking to Sean this week, and I you know, said to him, says my goal is to kind of have his life when I retire. So it's like
that's pretty much what this guy said too.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, and when I say kind of when I retire, I mean I would happy take early retirement at this point if I could swing it, but so we shall see.
I mean, I was sitting on the deck this week. I got
dude. I would.
I got my deck furniture in.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so. I saw that you did some trash picking for a grill this week too.
Yeah, I did. So one of my neighbors who's moving out of the city, it's funny like seeing like who you have as neighbors in Harrisburg. This person, founder, is politically involved. They own a bunch of buildings. He's selling off the buildings now. So, and he has a condo in Philadelphia. Can't have a grill with him. He's just like, I was just gonna put it on Second Street and just whoever fucking took it just took it.
Yeah.
So he says, Sean, do you want a free grill? And I'm like, yeah. So I mean, the thing is, like, it hasn't been used in a few years. The Striker still works, which is great. It's
what really matters. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as the lighter is still working. You know, and I cooked on it last night, and I mean, I was gonna get a Weber, but you know, this saved me a few $100. And then I bought some deck furniture yesterday. Like, I cannot wait to get my deck in order. You know, like to my own deck.
But you know, like I keep on saying, man, it's you know, the
I won't
the
get lifestyle, snuck on the deck either.
Well, I know, right? I'm saying the lifestyle channel has been rocking it, man. I mean, it's
yeah.
You know, I have to say,
I've been running more lately. Which has been nice.
I know you've been posting your you're posting your times and everything like this. You know,
I don't want to get. I'm inspiring other people to get. You know, I'm trying to be an.
It's like I said, it's your lifestyle channel, right? That's the whole idea, right? It's like you're not doing it for yourself. You're just doing it for like, you know, kind of to spread the kind of healthy lifestyle to everybody around. That's all, right?
The influence, the social media influencing.
Right. I mean, yeah, you gotta see, like, you know, you got Sean's, he got his cooking show. Right, you've got his design show. Right, you've got his exercise show. You got his fashion channel,
fashion.
Right? I mean, come on, the fashion channel is like, you know, the kind of like Adidas adjacent fashion channel. I mean, it's like, it's pretty awesome.
I did buy a couple shirts this week.
See that? See that?
I mean, not from Adidas, but no, I mean, like, you know, it's, I haven't been out, got to put my, spend my money somewhere. I haven't been able to go to the bar recently, you know, probably won't be going to the bar, you know, I'm past the winter hibernation at this point.
Why you, you don't want like your you don't want your COVID variant? You know, you got a problem with that?
Well, I mean, for so next week for Easter, we are going out to a fucking steakhouse.
Yeah, it's so, nice knowing you.
Rolling the dice. Hey, I look at it like this: if I get COVID, if I don't know, okay. I don't know
if I get COVID. Look, I've been exercising. I've been eating right. I got a great design department that I can hang out with. So it's okay.
I don't know how I didn't get COVID this past year if I picked it up symptomatically. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
From all the bullshit that I was doing. Like, I mean, like that from, no, from like, you know, going to all the right wing rallies,
yeah.
Like, you know, like photographing everything, having people around me who got COVID. I might have been a spreader, don't know, but no, I'm just joking. I don't want to go like that, but.
But yeah, keep digging, Sean, keep digging.
Yeah, no, but, you know, we're going out to a Brazilian steakhouse, which is going to be great. Looking forward to it. Eating a bunch of steak on Easter. And, you know, that's pretty much it. And, yeah. Looking towards the warm weather getting here.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I'm going to be excited. I'm excited for more and more and more warm weather. Well, let me get, so I got a couple of things and we can kind of go back and kind of just kind of do a tie up for the day, but a couple of cool space things to watch out for coming up this week. And that we, like I said, we're not going to, I'll, you know, close out with the programming change for next week too, as well. But since we're not meeting next week, I want to make sure you got this in. If you, any other fellow space nuts out there, the Mars helicopter Ingenuity is kind of coming closer to its kind of initial flight, its first attempt. It is this little tiny, like 4-pound, I believe, helicopter. You know, powered flight has never been tried on the surface of Mars. And this is going to be historic. I mean, it's going to be pretty incredible. It's just this cool little helicopter, and it was packed under the belly of the Perseverance rover when it kind of came down. And, you know, there's these, you know, series of, you know, routines it has to go through, did startup and those protocols. So it just dropped its debris shield that it was covering it up. And they had a picture that Perseverance sent back to Earth to kind of show that it had successfully dropped. This thing kind of is like, it's packed in on its side, and it has to slowly rotate down, and its legs kind of spring out, and then it can all drop down to the surface. The Perseverance rover will roll away, and then there's this kind of 33 by 33 foot patch on the planet that is kind of fairly flat, free of obstructions, that they're going to do that first test flight. And we'll see. Fingers crossed. I mean, if I remember correctly, it said probably as early as April 8th, but it might be sooner. My guess would be probably not, but, you know, just in case, you can check it out. That's coming up. And the coolest thing is they have this like little postage size piece of fabric from the Wright Brothers aircraft that was originally flown at the Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, that it's actually right there on the on that little helicopter. So that's the kind of thing that I just have to think is, you know, pretty.
Did you see the other space news that happened this morning?
The
last night?
The SpaceX rocket kind of disintegrating in orbit, that one? Or the Starlink thing? Or
the Falcon 9?
It was just
Well, people thought it was like a giant meteor shower.
Yeah. It looked over like the West Coast, right? If was that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oregon.
Yeah, that came. Yeah, no, that was
actually cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to do that. They're supposed to actually today. I should check it one more time, but
I remember one time I saw a huge meteorite breaking up, like when I was living back home. It's like 2013, 2014. Just happened to be like looking at the right spot, driving home from work at the right time. And I saw like a huge meteorite. This is like in the suburbs where you don't see this stuff because it's the light pollution.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saw a huge meteorite break up over the over like the one corner out of my eye, which is pretty cool. And apparently like the whole entire northeastern part of the country saw it. Like that's how large of a meteorite it was.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. That's
just pretty awesome. Throwing it out there.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. The other thing was supposed to happen. Well, yeah. I mean, SpaceX did this morning. They actually they tested the rockets or tested the engines, the Raptor engines for the Starship SN11. Right. So you remember they've been the Starship is, you know, what they hope to be this renewable rocket that will be able to launch and then kind of land both on here back on Earth, obviously, but also then on the moon and eventually Mars. Those are what those spectacular explosions have been. You remember the last one, the SN10, was the first time that they hit, they were able to, they hit the landing, but then, you know, about 10 minutes after it landed, right, came down a little hard, apparently. 10 minutes after it landed, it exploded, but they did kind of partially stick that landing. So, SN11 did the test fire this morning, and they may actually they may launch it today. They have not indicated that, but they have cleared the roads around the test area kind of all day, so they have a launch window that ends I want to say at like 5 or 6 o'clock today. So that might still happen. The engines have been tested, but they're looking to test that ahead. And their next generation, this kind of like super huge version of the Starship, is starting to be assembled. So there's going to be some test flights on that, or some tests on that coming up soon too. But we'll get to that when it gets closer. Let me know a little bit about some of the free will releases that we've got coming up. I've already talked about getting the vaccine this week, but what this one looks absolutely delish. This one is called Sweet Cherry Vanilla Mash. You know I'm a fan of the mashes. It's a sour ale brewed with sweet cherry puree, vanilla, and milk sugar, fermented with and still yet dense and soft body. This is one. This is their, what they say, reminds them of early spring trip for water ice, or water ice, as Sean would say. Swedish fish and gooey rich.
Get it right.
Yeah, you know, right, exactly. That comes in at 7.5 ABV. That's going to be available starting tomorrow at both locations. Another big announcement, Free Will is hiring. Right. So if you ever wanted to kind of get in this, they have a production team member. I'll put a link to this too as well. Here it is. They're looking for a full-time packaging team member for the brewery production crew located in Perkasie. The role will fill various aspects of packaging and logistics operations, including but not limited to the following duties and responsibilities. Keg cleaning and filling, learn to perform all aspects of the Wild Goose MC250 filler with fifth head upgrade, perform off-pack label changes and so on, equipment maintenance and so on. I'll post a link to that from there. And if you do apply to that and you do get an interview, just tell them Raging Chicken sent you. That would be fantastic. So I like to plug them as much as I can, help support some local industry. So they are hiring that too as well. The other thing that kind of came out is that this is coming out tomorrow. Yes, indeed. Is the Lord Business. Lord Business is great. And this is like another one of the examples. The first version of Lord Business, when it first came out, I liked it, wasn't thrilled about it. Starting that following year when they released Lord Business, I was like, whoa, this is fantastic. Well, it's coming back again. Lord Business, a double IPA. It's the West Coast IPA, brewed with a touch of rye, hopped extensively, hot side with Citra, Columbus, Chinook, and Simcoe, then dry hop further with Citra, Simcoe, and Chinook. It's got really kind of like a nice bite to it, but it's got really good tasting beer, and it comes in at about 9% ABV. That, once again, will be starting tomorrow, will be available there. You can go to freewillbrewing.store, freewillbrewing.store for all your packaging needs. And remember that if you do go to the store, you do want to kind of have it delivered to you. They are delivering to Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. You go on, you can order. If you want to pick it up at the store, you can go ahead, order online, go in, they'll have the order ready for you. Or if you want to hit that $85 mark, you can have it shipped to you for free. Or you can just get it shipped to you anyways, but you're going to have to pay the shipping cost. But you hit the $85 mark and you'll get it shipped for free. Otherwise, it's calculated by the total weight of the package. So that's what I got this week. Sean, what else you got going on for you, man?
Nothing too much. I will be photographing a rally this afternoon, or like a little small demonstration for health, SEIU Healthcare PA, which is always great working with them. So I'll be doing that this afternoon. I'll be going out on a run again tomorrow morning. Looking to do a long run, maybe like 4 or 4.5 miles. So
I hope you're going to post your stats and everything like that. I mean,
I will definitely.
All right, just making sure.
No, well, I mean, I wanted to get back into running. I haven't been to the gym in about a year when all this broke down. And it's like, I want to get some working out in, but it's like, I don't want to go back to lifting and stuff like that. So, you know, I picked up running and I'm actually surprised how easily, like, I've been able to get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that has to deal with is I haven't smoked since November.
Huh. Funny. So, it's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting. Is that just a correlation, you think? Or is that a coincidence?
I think so. yeah. So there's that. I got my stimulus check in this week. Paid off a huge chunk of my credit card.
Nice.
And I only have like a few hundred dollars left to pay off. So I'll have that paid off next month. And, you know, my credit score is finally like, you know, get in the ballpark of 700.
Excellent, man. Well, you know, I'm really glad you're doing your part to help keep the banks in business. I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think like you know, one of the things like I hate, like, not just being in debt in period, like, and having like, you know, not having, you know, having a job, like a lower paying job for so many years, like, it's bullshit that we assign this arbitrary number to people with your credit score,
you think,
and have that like and have that determine your financial future when it comes to like paying off car loans or getting a house and shit like that. You know, and you know, a big part of that is the student fucking loans.
Yep.
Like, you know, like student loan debt, you know, fucking terrible on your credit score.
Yep.
So, but you know, man. I've been chiseling that away, building up my credit score, and looking to get a car hopefully this summer. So, you know,
very
big
cool.
Picture.
Yeah, man, it's awesome. It was awesome. You know,
I'm looking to do some cooking this weekend again as well, and some grilling.
Ooh, you're breaking out the grill.
I used the grill last night.
Nice.
But I think what I want to make is a tri-tip.
Nice.
On there, like, I want to do some cooking like that. Like, I like making stuff in batches, or I might just get like a 2-pound dry aged ribeye, and cook that.
Nice. I did some barbecue chicken last night. I've grilled now probably 7 times already this year, right? I need to be out. I need to be doing that stuff outside. It's okay.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Like, so Hummer's is the place I go to in the market. I've been going there since I moved out here. The owners are really great. They have a place in the West Shore market right now as well as staying out there. Their meats are fucking phenomenal. Like, everything is like cut up. You don't have to remove any excess fat or like silver skin off of it, like off anything you get. And they make their own kibasi.
Yeah.
So they have like cheddar cheese filled kibasi, which is just like amazing. Like, I've been braising it in like a chicken stock over the winter, but now I threw it on the grill last night. Even better. Just amazing.
Nice, man. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, a couple things I forgot. I just forgot to mention this real quick. I mentioned this at the start of the show, but it's one of the. I also have a link down in here. This is just really cool, and I'm sorry, I just needed to kind of get my geek in on this one too as well. About Lego's new space shuttle set, which is I'm just really like thrilled about. So I just want to make sure that, you know, if you really want to know, this is going to be the 40th anniversary of the space shuttle launch. Lego's coming out with the space shuttle Discovery set. That's done a collaboration with NASA too as well. It's pretty cool. It's going to be available April 1st. It comes in at a hefty $200 price, but it has 2,354 pieces. I'm salivating over it. It's like it's got the Hubble space. It's got the Hubble telescope and the payload doors. It's just really freaking cool. So if you want to geek out on some Lego stuff, I'm here. I've already got a couple things I need to assemble. I've got the International Space Station, which I haven't done yet, and a kind of a moon base one. So this one, believe me, I'm looking at this, man, I would really love that, but we shall see. But Well, cool, man. You know, I wish you some like a happy weekend. So I want to say, everybody, we will not be live either Monday or Friday of next week. I'm going to be away. My family and I are taking taking a few days. Just to kind of just, I need to get out of my house is basically what it comes down to. And so that'll be good. So
look at you, got your vaccine. You're getting out of the house.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, you know, like it's kind of like
I get it.
You know what I mean? Like, if I can quarantine, like, you know, someplace else just for a change where I'm not going to have to be around other people. I'm not going to have to be, you know, I could still be safe and all that. I know that's going to happen. Then I need it at this point, because I'm really not firing on all cylinders.
I hit that point over the winter, like middle of February, where, I mean, I risked it and went to the bar a few times, like just on, like on a Friday, just to have a couple of drinks and like get some takeout.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I totally get it. It's just like, it's like, I think like that, I hit that wall back in like February and March, and now the weather being nice, it's like getting out and running has been really therapeutic for that. And even just get out and like walk and shit like that. Yeah. Like, thank God the winter's over.
Yeah. I mean, you got to understand, I mean, my excitement has been grocery shopping. Okay. And I go late at night when there's hardly anybody else around. Right. I have like done virtually nothing for over a year. Right. So I am like, we did go, I mean, you remember, like in the fall, we did go down to the shore, for a weekend that we had, it was like around my wife's birthday time. That was when all the cases were down. And again, it was the kind of thing where we didn't do anything while we were there. It was like we're just with the people that, you know, we are normally around, and then that was it. But you know, it's been a long haul. So we'll take a little break for next week, but we'll be back the week of April 5th. And remember, on April 5th, Out to Coop Live, we'll have Cyril Michalejko will be on. We're talking about Penridge School District and about progressives in Bucks County. And then we'll be back then. I guess that would make it, what, April 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, I guess, for Out the Coop once again. Well, hey, man, enjoy this weekend. I said when I think you went on a break or you had to take your call, I went up to check on my daughter and stuff like this, and the sun had come out. It was beautiful outside. So I know I'm going to try to get out and spend some time outside too as well.
It is fucking windy today.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that there's a wind advisory going on, but I don't care, man. Just give me the weather. All right, man. Well, hey, have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you in a little bit.
You too. Have a good one.
All right. Take it easy, man. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you all for tuning in. Sorry for all the kind of the tech issues kind of on my end today. It is what it is. What can I say? This is kind of about my parting shot of like, I need to get out of here. See ya!